It's 10 o'clock.
CBS News. Cuba appears willing to begin talks aimed at reestablishing diplomatic relations with the United States, according to the Cuban ambassador to Mexico. I'm Stephanie Shelton, sitting in for Jim Kilpatrick on the CBS radio network. The Cuban ambassador, Dr. Fernando Lopez Bueno, made his statement in Mexico City, as George Nathanson reports.
Cuba would be willing to enter into negotiations with the United States at any time. According to the Cuban ambassador to Mexico here tonight, Fidel Castro lays down but one condition to U.S.-Cuban negotiations, that is the lifting of the U.S.-imposed blockade, which has cut the island off from the rest of the world for more than 10 years. The statement came during a press conference here, the first the Cuban embassy has called over the past several years. The Cuban ambassador declared that his country is not engaged in a holy war against the United States. He said Cuba would be willing to sit down to the negotiation table with the United States. He did not say what might result, but that negotiations must be carried out on an equal basis. That is, no blockade. George Nathanson for CBS News in Mexico City.
No reaction from the State Department on this as yet. A word of warning to the Arabs. The story in a moment.
Hello, everybody. This is Lowell Thomas. You can tune me in every day, Monday through Friday. I've been broadcasting for a long, long time, and it seems to me that anyone who listens regularly to the CBS radio network is sure to keep up to the minute. That's because of CBS News right on the hour, special reports, net alert when the news breaks suddenly. So long for now. Remember, it's a good idea to keep tuned to the CBS radio network.
Hello, I'm Carol O'Connor. I've got a friend, and he's an owl named Woodsy. He's the new national symbol for a clean environment. He knows how to beat pollution, but he needs your help. As Archie Bunker would say, listen, when you're outside, don't be meatheads painting the trees, the rocks, and the signs. Mother Nature paints the outdoors. You want to paint? Go home and paint your house or your furniture or something. Join me and Woodsy. Give a hoot. Don't pollute. Huh?
Vice President Gerald Ford warns that the Arab oil embargo could stop American food exports to Mideast countries. But in a speech prepared for a Washington chemist luncheon Tuesday, Ford adds that he's optimistic the oil embargo will soon be lifted. In London, oil industry sources are saying the Arabs might drop their oil embargo against the U.S. and Holland next month, or just let it fade quietly away. The oil experts say pressure is building up against the embargo because of its possible long-term effect on the world economy. Sweden has become the first Western nation to feel the energy pinch badly enough to resort to gasoline rationing. Sweden's program began about 6 hours ago. Car owners there are being allowed just 22 gallons to last until the end of February. The effects of the rationing may not be felt right away. Swedish drivers were filling up their gas tanks as well as extra containers on Monday, despite the threat of stiff fines for hoarding. The Washington Post reports that Secretary of State Henry Kissinger told Israeli Defense Minister Moshe Dayan at their Washington meeting last week that he doubts Egypt will accept all of Dayan's troop disengagement proposals. The newspaper, quoting Jerusalem sources, says Dayan suggested a unilateral Israeli withdrawal to the Mitla and Gidi passes in the Sinai, with the possibility of further pullbacks. In return, Dayan wants a reduction of Egyptian troops east of the Suez Canal and limits on their armaments. Cambodian President Lon Nol has ordered Phnom Penh officials to form paramilitary neighborhood committees to protect the city against any possible attack by insurgent forces. As Lon Nol made the request in a radio address, the rebels shelled Phnom Penh again, hitting a hospital and wounding 8 patients. Insurgents have been lobbing rockets into the city for almost daily for the past few weeks. Energy Chief William Simon has asked major trucking companies and all the nation's railroad to tell him how much fuel they have on hand. He is investigating reports of possible hoarding. More news in a moment.
Your own worst enemy when it comes to saving, why not join the payroll savings plan? That way, you can begin saving before you start spending. All you have to do is sign up where you work. Then an amount you specify is set aside from each paycheck and use to buy United States savings bonds. You build up savings and earn good interest at the same time. The payroll savings plan could turn out to be your best friend. Join the plan that makes dreams come true.
The Consumer Product Safety Commission is warning people to look out for a glue that's so strong it can cement the user's fingers together. The glue sold under at least 10 brand names, which originally developed for surgery. Its general name is cyanoacryloic, and there may be some 1 million tubes of it on the market. The commission is trying to stop distribution of the glue because people whose fingers get stuck together with it might need medical help to unstick them. Stephanie Shelton, CBS News.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI. Stay tuned now for the CBS Radio Mystery Theater, next on KIXI. Its final college basketball score, Southern Cal defeated Washington by a score of 90-76. And the weather outlook for the KIXI listening area. Continued cold, but moderating slightly by Wednesday. Variable clouds and increasing chance of snow flurries tomorrow through Wednesday. Tomorrow's high in the mid-30s, in the upper 30s on Wednesday. Lows in the mid-20s. And currently in downtown Seattle, a temperature of 30 degrees. It's 31 at the airport. The barometer is holding steady. It reads 30.16. Wind out of the east at 10 miles per hour. Correct Pacific Daylight Time, now 7 minutes past 10.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents... Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sound of suspense, the fear you can hear. For the next 52 minutes, we're going to take you into the world of mystery, into the world of terrifying imagination. The story you are going to hear concerns a question which has been asked since the first men on Earth were born and died. Is there a life after death? Is there a way to return from the grave? And if there is, can we come back in the body of a living creature? Even one that has claws instead of fingernails? Here is one chilling answer.
Dr. Singh, you have to tell me. Could my wife have come back as a bird? A sparrow, something like that?
Well, your wife was a rather big woman, Mr. Moresby, in a physical sense.
How about a snake? A seagull? How about a cat? A great, big, fat cat? A cat?
Our mystery drama, The Return of the Moresbys, was written especially for the Radio Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Patrick O'Neill. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, brewers of Budweiser. I'll be back shortly with Act One.
I'm High Brown, producer of Radio Mystery Theater. Before we begin our story, a word. This enterprise is new in modern network radio. But for many who grew up with radio drama, it's the return of a special kind of magic, a vast and magic theater where nothing is impossible, where the listener's imagination is the real star. And now that we're on, we'd like to hear from you, so much so that if you send us your name and address, you're eligible for one of 50 prizes each week for 3 weeks. 2 AM-FM stereo phonos, 2 travel clock radios, and 46 anthologies of modern suspense. We'd like hearing how you feel about radio drama. But all you need do is send us your name and address to Mystery Theater, Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. That's Box 50, Radio City Station, New York, 119. Offer good everywhere unless locally prohibited.
Harold?
Mm-hmm.
I'm cold.
Yeah, I know, dear. Now, I'll have this fire going in just a minute. Are you sure you know what you're doing? We haven't used that fireplace in years.
Oh, there's nothing to it. Now, I'll just strike this match. There. Should be going good in just a minute.
Harold, isn't the smoke supposed to go up the chimney?
Yeah, it is.
A fire in the fireplace is one answer to the energy crisis. But the American Red Cross reminds you to be sure that your chimney and damper are cleaned and in good working order. In addition, build the fire toward the back. Keep screens around the fireplace. Don't use kerosene, lighter fluid, or gasoline to start fires. And don't leave a roaring fire unattended. For other tips on safety, contact your local Red Cross chapter.
I can't breathe, Harold.
While you're about it, ask about first aid courses, too.
Now, here is Act One. Like all murder stories, sooner or later, it reaches the office of a daily newspaper.
You wanted to see me, Chief?
You bet I want to see you, Prouty. Come in and shut that door.
I bet I know what it's about. That story I filed on Richard Moresby, right?
I got a flash for you, Prouty. This is a newspaper office, not a fiction magazine. You take this story of yours and see if you can sell it to Weirdo Digest or something. But get it off my desk.
Now, wait a while, Max. I know it's offbeat, but I thought I handled it with a kind of a light touch.
Stories about murder can't be handled with a light touch, not on this paper.
But it's accurate. I mean, this is exactly what the guy Moresby told me, just before he died.
Well, he must have been out of his head.
He asked for somebody to hear his story. That's how I got to meet him. I was at the hospital covering that subway accident.
Now, that story made sense to me. Nothing but nice, clear facts. But this nonsense...
Please, let me tell you about this guy. Maybe you'll change your mind.
All right, what about him?
Well, for one thing, he was a real distinguished-looking guy. The only thing peculiar about him was his eyes.
His eyes?
Yeah. They were the palest blue eyes I ever saw in a man. They weren't really blue at all. They were like silver.
Big deal. So he had silver eyes.
And when he started to tell me about himself... Well, I just had to hear the whole story, Chief.
Yes, I was born in London, but my family moved to the States when I was young. They didn't improve much on the climate when they did. We lived in Vermont. I don't think I was ever warm enough until the age of 24 when I moved to Southern California. I lived on beaches. A superb swimmer, a superior surfboarder, and a terrible bum. It was on the beach at Malibu that I met the woman who was to become my wife. Her name was Una. She was as pale as a gardenia. A gardenia with bones. Una had more bones than any other woman I've ever met.
Lovely day, isn't it?
I beg your pardon?
I said it's a beautiful day. I don't think I've ever seen the ocean look prettier.
Frankly, the Pacific always looked a little muddy to me.
I wonder if that's what Balboa said when he first saw it.
Oh, he probably said, what a great place for surfing.
Ah, I see you have a surfboard.
Yes, as a matter of fact, I think I see a wave that I like. Will you excuse me?
Oh, I wish I had the nerve to try it.
Yeah, you really should. Well, bye now.
Maybe I'll ask my chauffeur to teach me.
I'm sorry. What did you say?
Charles, my chauffeur. He's very good at sports.
Come to think of it, that wave doesn't look so good after all. By the way, my name is Richard. Richard Moresby.
How do you do? My name is Una.
Una Vandermeer. That was her name. As soon as I realized that she was from the Vandermeer family, she didn't seem half as bony as she did before. In fact... Not only did I become accustomed to Una's appearance, I was even able to tolerate her inane conversation.
Can't you just feel the mystery of the stars, Richard? Sometimes I feel their vibrations as if they're trying to communicate with me. Do you ever feel that?
Well, sometimes, I suppose.
I really think we must be one with the universe, don't you? I really believe there's just one great universal soul... And we're all part of it. Don't you think so, too?
Yes, of course. Right on, as they say. You see what I mean?
She talked that way all the time, from the first day of our honeymoon. Well, it was a fine honeymoon just the same. It lasted a whole year on the beaches of the Caribbean, on the French Riviera. I got browner and browner. Una got freckles. Finally, we returned to our home in Los Angeles and settled down to a quiet, comfortable marriage. Is that you're playing?
It's sitar music, darling. Oh, it's just so spiritual.
What made you buy the record?
Oh, Dr. Singh recommended it.
Who?
Dr. Singh, at the Temple of Metempsychosis, you know.
The Temple of what?
Metempsychosis. I told you about joining the temple last week. Oh, Richard, sometimes I think you don't listen to me.
As you may know, Southern California abounds in quasi-religious organizations. And she'd gone through a number of them without discovering the universal soul at any of their altars.
Darling, please come to one of Dr. Singh's lectures. He's such a magnificent speaker. He emits such vibrations.
And I went. You see what an obliging husband I was? Actually, it turned out to be more interesting than I thought. The temple itself was unpretentious, and Dr. Singh was an impressive man. And when he spoke, I realized why his message had such appeal for Una, because he preached a doctrine that combined eternal life with the love of small animals.
The soul is immortal. The soul cannot die. The soul, upon leaving the body, must make its passage elsewhere. There is a science called eschatology, which deals with the last four things: death, judgment, heaven, and hell. It is the most ancient of all sciences, and from its wisdom has come the inescapable certainty of the transmigration of souls.
Yeah, I know it's a bit weird, but stay with it.
And where does the soul go? According to the wise men of all generations past, the soul departs from the mouth of the dying. It is, consequently, a small thing. A bird, a snake, a mouse, a dove, or a hawk, a dog, a cat, an insect. For these small creations of God are empty vessels placed upon earth for only one purpose: to house the departing souls of humanity, so that they need not wander forever in a trackless eternity.
Yeah, it's pure rot, of course. But that's what the man said. And Una sat there and believed every single word.
Oh, wasn't he marvelous, Richard? Isn't it wonderful that the soul never dies? That we can all come back as little animals?
I'm not sure I want to come back as an animal.
But you'd still be you, Richard. Oh, don't you see?
Well, by the way, what was that envelope you handed Dr. Singh after the meeting?
The envelope? Oh, that was my donation, of course.
Your donation to the temple?
Yes, to support the work of Dr. Singh, to open other temples around the world.
How much money was in the envelope?
Well, what does it matter, Richard?
I'm just curious.
$2,000.
Una, you go to that temple once a week. Do you always give that kind of donation?
Oh, it's all in a very good cause, Richard.
Well, in an equally good cause, that of finding out exactly how much of my wife's money was supporting this nonsense, I sneaked a look at Una's checkbook. The answer astonished me. Not only had my wife put more than $30,000 into Dr. Singh's collection plate, she had also donated some $20,000 more to various institutions for the care and feeding of cats, dogs, and birds.
It was so kind of you to honor us with a visit, Dr. Singh. I know how terribly busy you are.
On the contrary, you were kind to invite me to your lovely home.
Oh. Now tell me, Dr. Singh, what determines the kind of animal one becomes when the soul escapes after death?
Mrs. Moresby, that is a question which has baffled wise men for countless generations.
But isn't it possible to do, research?
Yes, Mrs. Moresby. I don't doubt that we could find the answer to such great questions if only we had the proper resources.
You mean like laboratories and so forth?
No, the research I mean would be conducted merely by spreading the word of metempsychosis to the farthest corners of the earth. And let human experience reveal the truth to us. But unfortunately, that would require money. A great deal more money than the movement has at present.
Well, it seems to me you don't do badly. Well, there you are.
Hello, Richard.
Where have you been all morning?
Right here, in my little sewing room.
Don't tell me you were sewing.
Oh, don't be silly. Actually, I've been composing something.
A letter?
Oh, something more important than that. Richard, do you realize that I have no last will and testament?
Well, why should you? Healthy young chicken like you.
I can't call myself young anymore, Richard.
You'll always be young to me, darling.
Oh, that's very sweet. But just the same, it's only practical to have a will. Would you read it over, Richard, and see if it... Well, if it sounds legal enough?
Certainly. Well, let's see now. I, Una Vandermeyer Moresby, a resident of the city of Los Angeles, state of California, residing at 8 Sheridan Drive, being over the age of 21 and of sound and disposing mind and memory. Darling, this is superb. Where on earth did you get the language?
Well, to tell you the truth, I copied it out of Daddy's will.
The one that left you $10
million? Yes.
Well, I don't see how you could go wrong. Let's see now. Not acting under duress, menace, fraud, or undue influence of any person whomsoever... And
Good Lord, Una.
What's it? What is it? What?
You're not serious about this.
Oh, about making a will? Well, of course
I
am.
I mean, this bequest to the temple of mumbo-jumbo.
What's wrong with it? Now, listen, darling, I told you how important Dr. Singh's work is, but it requires money to carry it on. Tons of money. So the least I can do is to help the poor man as much as I can.
But you're giving him 90% of your entire fortune.
Ah, you'll still have $1 million if I go first, Richard. Isn't that enough?
No, it isn't. I mean, the whole thing is ridiculous. Don't you realize that man is a fraud, a charlatan?
What?
Oh, for heaven's sake, Una, open your eyes. Don't you realize the simple truth? Your money won't build any temples. It's just going to line the pockets of that turbaned phony.
Richard, what a terrible thing to say. Well, you told me you liked Dr. Singh, that you were very impressed by his theory of transmigration.
Darling, I was only saying all that to please you. But now I'm telling you that the only thing Dr. Singh is planning to transmigrate is your money into his savings account. And frankly, I'm not going to let him do it.
Richard! What are you doing? You're tearing up my will.
That's right.
How dare you do such a thing? It's my money, and I'll do whatever I please with it.
Una, darling, I just want you to have a chance to come to your senses.
Oh, there's nothing wrong with my senses. I can see very clearly what the real trouble is. If I didn't leave a will, all my money would go to you, wouldn't it?
Well, naturally, I'm your husband. You don't have any other evidence.
That's why you're acting this way. It's just plain and simple greed.
Una, listen to me.
No, it's all right. It's all right. I'm glad you tore up that will, Richard, because I realize now that I was quite wrong.
Do you?
Yes. It's a mistake to leave only 9 million of my money to the temple. I'm going to leave all of it to Dr. Singh.
When Una actually drafted that incredible document and called our attorney for a Monday morning appointment, I realized that I had to do something very drastic before the weekend was over. I had to kill my poor misguided wife. I had to make her one with the universe. It's obvious that Mr. Moresby is going to be a very reluctant murderer. The question is, will his reluctance get in the way of his efficiency? We'll get the details when we return shortly with Act Two.
Oh, hurry!
When you say butter, you said a lot of things nobody else can say, yeah. When you say, bud, you've gone as far as you can go to get the very best.
Why do some people think Bud is sort of special? Well, go ahead and find out why. For yourself. I mean, you don't really need me to tell you. Just try a Bud and think about it and decide for yourself. Well, sure, the Budweiser people really do believe that brewing beer right does make a difference. But even that's up to you.
Because the king of beers is leading all the rest. When you say Budweiser, you said it all.
Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis. Are you looking for a rewarding career in law enforcement? The Executive Protective Service, a uniformed security force under direction of the United States Secret Service, needs qualified young men and women to help protect the White House and foreign embassies in Washington, D.C. The pay of an Executive Protective Service officer is $10,000 a year to start, and there's great advancement opportunity. Officers have got all the fringe benefits of other federal employees and more. Interested? Well, to be considered, you must be a United States citizen between 21 and 29 years of age on June 30th, 1974, and have a high school diploma or the equivalent or 1 year of appropriate police experience. You must be at least 5'8", but not more than 6'4", and your weight has to be in proportion to your height. And you have to have good eyesight with at least 20/40 in each eye, correctable to 20/20. For more information, check your phone book and then get in touch with the nearest office of the United States Secret Service, an equal opportunity employer.
Now let's return to Richard Moresby. In order to find him, we'll have to search the highway, for Richard has taken his white Jaguar out for a spin. But there he is now.
On Saturday morning, I took a little spin in my XKL and did some thinking on the open road. I didn't want to kill poor Una, of course. The whole idea was repellent. But on the other hand, the thought of Dr. Singh spending the fortune that was rightfully mine was even more abhorrent. However, I decided I would make one more stab at a reconciliation. Darling, may I come in?
It's your living room, too.
It doesn't feel like it. Matter of fact, I've felt like a stranger in this house for the past 2 days.
I suppose that's my fault.
Well, you haven't been exactly cordial, have you?
I've hardly been home, Richard. I spent all day yesterday at the temple and all morning at the pet rest kennels.
And how are all the little souls doing?
You just won't stop being irreverent, will you? It's been my money all along, hasn't it, Richard? From the very beginning, you were attracted to my money.
Oh, now, darling, if you thought that, you would never have married me.
I didn't want to believe it. I don't want to believe it now.
How can I prove to you that you're mistaken?
Richard, do you really want to prove it?
Of course, I'll do anything you say.
All right. Now, I know exactly what you can do. You can let me leave my money to Dr. Singh and the temple.
The whole 10 million?
Yes, because that's the only way I'll know that it's me you love.
Well, you can't say I didn't try. But Una's decision now left me with absolutely no alternative. I was still deeply unhappy about the necessity of taking her life. However, fate was kind to me that very afternoon.
Now you're sure that you want me to continue reading, Richard?
Of course, darling.
Well, I'm sort of embarrassed about this part. It's a paper that I wrote myself.
Something you wrote?
Yeah, I wrote it this morning. I was going to show it to Dr. Singh. It's it's a sort of a poem. It's called Death.
Snappy title.
Hope I can read my own handwriting. Death has become nothing to me. Death holds no fear for me. Come, Death. I welcome you. Lead me to the woods, the waters, the air above the earth. Come, Take me, Death. Your touch is kind. Why do you look like that? Is it really that terrible?
Oh, terrible. Oh, no, my darling, it's beautiful.
Do you mean it?
You must give it to me, Una. I must have it.
You like it that much?
Yes, I certainly do.
I'll type it up for you, Richard.
No, I must have the original. Now, just the way you wrote it.
Oh, darling, I'm so flattered. What will you do with it?
Oh, I'm going to put it in a frame, of course. And I know just where I'm going to hang it. Yes, I could hardly believe my ears. Una had written her own suicide note in her own handwriting. It was truly karma at work. Now there was no question of failure and no longer any need for delay.
What a lovely idea it was, Richard. Candlelight dinner for two.
Yes. I thought you'd enjoy it.
It's so sweet of you to handle the whole menu with cook. You spoil me shamefully.
And that night, I spoiled her just a bit more by bringing hot cocoa to her in bed.
Oh, Richard, you shouldn't have bothered.
But I know how you like your hot cocoa before retiring, Una. You can't get to sleep without it.
No, but Parker could have brought it to me.
Oh, no, this is something I had to do myself.
Oh.
Drink it down now.
Yes. I'm drinking it.
Does it taste all right?
Oh, it tastes just fine.
Now, that was very good news, because I prepared the hot cocoa myself. And I had no idea whether 25 melted sleeping pills would seriously affect the flavor. Finally, Una was all tucked in for the night. I went into my study, picked up the poem she had written for Dr. Singh, and brought it to the bedroom. I placed it carefully on the night table beside her. Then I bent over my sleeping darling to see if she was getting along all right. She was very, very quiet. And then a dreadful thing happened. Una opened her eyes.
Richard. Oh, Richard.
Hush, hush, darling. Now go back to sleep.
Richard, I'm sick.
No, my love. No, you're
sick.
Only sleepy.
Cocoa tasted so strange. I didn't want to upset you, Richard, but
No, you'll feel much better in the morning, Una. I promise you, tomorrow morning you'll be one with the universe.
Richard, that paper.
What paper, darling?
My poem for Dr. Singh. What's it doing there?
I was just reading it over, darling, that's all.
And that bottle, my sleeping pills. Oh, it's empty, the bottle is empty. Oh, Richard. Oh, Richard. What have you done?
Nothing, darling. Nothing. Now, go to sleep.
Cocoa. You put sleeping pills in it. All of them.
Don't try to get up, Una. Please, don't.
Trying to kill me. You're trying to murder me.
Now, for heaven's sake, Una, now stop saying things like that. Do you want the servants to hear?
Help somebody. Help.
Now, come on, lie down. Lie down, Una, for heaven's sake. Come on, now, lie down. Lie down. There. That's better.
You won't get away with it. You won't get away with it, Richard. I promise you.
Anything you say, darling.
I'll come back, Richard. You know I'll be back.
Yes. Yes, of course. Just welcome death, Una, the way you wrote in your little poem.
I'll be back. I swear it.
The funeral was held 2 days later. It was a magnificent occasion, of course.
I gave Luna a farewell that was consistent with her vast fortune. Everything was the best. Coffin, flowers, preacher, everything. Her burial place was one of the choicest bits of real estate at Forest Lawn. The only discordant note was the fact that Dr. Singh insisted on saying a few words at the service. They were familiar words, but frankly, they gave me a slight bit of a chill.
The body of Una Moresby is dead, but her soul lives on. The soul cannot die. The soul is immortal. It has left the earthly remains of this woman and has sought the body of a small living thing. There it will abide until the Almighty is ready to choose its next home. Mourn not the end of Una Moresby, for there is no end.
I couldn't help congratulating myself on how well everything had gone. When I called for medical attention the night of Una's death, the physician was only too ready to declare her a suicide. The police had to be informed, naturally, and they, too, agreed with the doctor's verdict. Una had died by her own hand, and she had died without a will. There was simply no question that the matter would be probated in my favor. Suddenly, I realized I was not only rich, but a rich widower. What vistas opened for me? The devil. Look out, you stupid mongrel. Dog, I'm trying to get run over. I admit I was shaken up by it. I mean, it was sort of a coincidence, you know? Right after the funeral and all that. I was very glad to be home again, you can be sure.
Excuse me, Mr. Moresby?
Yes, Parker?
Cook is worried about the raccoon, sir.
The what?
There's been a raccoon at the kitchen door all morning, and Cook is badly alarmed, I'm afraid. I've tried to scare it away, but it keeps returning.
A raccoon, for heaven's sake? Why don't you just shoot it and make a coat out of it?
I was wondering if you wished me to call the game warden, sir.
Please, Parker, do whatever you please about it. I'm going to take a nap.
Yes, sir. Very good, sir.
I went upstairs at once, undressed, and got into bed. It was a warm day, and yet I found myself cold. I got out the electric blanket and soon felt very cozy indeed. In fact, I felt so much better that I made a phone call. Hello, may I speak to Rachel? Thank you very much. Hello, Rachel?
Yeah, who's this?
Rachel, you probably don't even know my name, but it's Moresby, Richard Moresby.
Who?
You met me at the club numerous times. I'm the rather distinguished-looking gentleman who sits at the table on the far right corner.
Oh, yeah, well, that's not my station.
Yeah, I know it isn't, and I've always regretted it. Frankly, I would have enjoyed my lunches at the club even more if you had served them.
Listen, I'm pretty busy right now.
Well, what I wanted to find out was if you're busy this evening.
Oh, what'd you have in mind?
Oh, a little, quiet dinner, perhaps.
Is that all you had in mind?
Why don't we just wait and see? I can pick you up outside the club whenever you're free.
Yeah, how I know it's you. I mean, I'm still not sure which gentleman you are.
I'll be sitting in an XKL Jaguar. Do you think you'll recognize it?
A Jag? I get off at 6:30.
See you then. Yes, I was feeling very good now. Very good indeed. I would have drifted off into a pleasant sleep, except for one thing. The moment I thought a bomb had gone off in the room. Then I realized it was nothing more than a bird. A foolish sparrow had dived in headfirst into the plate glass window of the bedroom, and now lay stunned on the carpet. I looked at the thing's fluttering little heart, and suddenly I was struck by a terrifying palpitation of my own. The dog, the raccoon, the bird.
Good Lord, could one of them have been Una?
Has Una Moresby returned from the grave? Nonsense. Such things don't really happen. But perhaps we should reserve judgment until I return shortly with Act 3.
And now another tale of the ball and chain. At Kellogg's Special K presents
The Good, the Bad, and the Heavy.
Why is that cowboy wearing a ball and chain?
Because carrying around extra pounds can be just like carrying around a ball and chain.
How symbolic.
What will it be, senor?
Give me the Special K breakfast.
Here you go. Bola Special K, skim milk, orange juice, and coffee. Ah. Say, don't I know you from someplace?
You probably don't recognize me with my ball and chain. I used to be 10 pounds lighter, but I'm getting back that way by exercising and eating smart at every meal. Starting with this here Special K breakfast.
What's so special?
It's less than 240 calories, 99% fat-free, and delicious. It's going to help me get rid of this here ball and chain.
I bet your horse will be glad to hear that.
Another ball and chain fights the dust.
Your happy ending could begin with the Kellogg's Special K breakfast.
That's Kellogg's Special K.
That's right.
Good night.
We hope you're enjoying our new CBS Mystery Theater. It's another addition to our KIXI programming we're very proud of. We've made quite a few additions in the past year. For instance, we've added 1,000 people to our news team. People like Walter Cronkite, Dan Rather, Wynne Elliott, Douglas Edwards, Mike Wallace. Just six of the more than 1,000 CBS reporters who help make KIXI Seattle's number one news service. And in the morning, we provide the only 90-minute news service in the area, 7 to 8:30 each morning, Monday through Friday. The complete CBS news team, plus Seattle's best local coverage, and up-to-the-second traffic reports. This is Dean Smith. Join me and Bob Little, Ken Stewart, Clarence McDaniels, Norm Bobrow, Gary Jeanette, plus Chet Huntley, Charles Osgood, and the CBS news team for Seattle's best news coverage. 90 minutes of news each day, Monday through Friday, 7 to 8:30 a.m. here on KIXI 91 a.m., 96 FM, where the listeners are.
Now let's see if common sense has returned to our hero. He's doing a sensible thing right now. He's taking a good, refreshing shower.
By the time evening came, I was feeling better. All my peculiar notions about Una's animal reincarnation seemed ludicrous as I stood in front of the shaving mirror. I thought about the delicious young woman that was waiting for me at the club. I'd admired Rachel's way with a tray for months, but ever faithful to my wife, I hadn't done more than gaze from afar. But now, things were going to be different. Yes, who is it?
It's Parker, sir.
Yes, come in, Parker. It's all right.
Excuse me, sir. A bit of emergency in the kitchen.
Well, what is it?
A snake, sir.
A what?
Cook insists that there's a snake curled up in the telephone wire. Oh,
that's ridiculous, Parker.
Cook says it's there, Mr. Moresby. They do get into the house sometimes.
Well, tell Cook she's seeing things. Tell her to stop nipping at the cooking sherry and she'll soon stop seeing snakes.
Yes, sir.
What was that?
I would guess it was Cook, sir.
Oh, for heaven's sake, go down and see to it, Parker.
I'll try, sir. But I'm not very good with snakes, sir.
Well, what do you think I am, an expert? But that wasn't the end of it. 10 minutes later, Parker was back upstairs saying that the snake had left the kitchen and run into the living room. No, I suppose snakes don't run, they slither. It slithered into the living room and was now embracing still another telephone wire, obviously mistaking it for a long-lost love. But then, another unsettling thought came into my mind. What if the snake... No, that was ridiculous. Hello?
Hi, is this Mr. Moresby?
Yes, who's this?
Rachel, from the club.
Oh, yes, Rachel, what is it?
Listen, could you make it 6 instead of 6:30? I'll try to sneak out a little early.
Yes, fine. I'll be there as soon as I can.
In the Jaguar, right?
Yes, in the Jaguar.
Listen, the reason I want to leave earlier is because my husband always picks me up at 6:30.
What was that?
So I asked one of the girls I work with to tell him that I got another job someplace. He won't care. He likes me to earn extra money.
Yes, I see.
So, just to make the story look good, I guess you'll have to lend me a few dollars after our date.
Yes, of course.
And listen, I really do remember you, Sugar. You're the handsome one with the cute bald head. See you soon.
As it happens, I have a very full head of hair. But distressing as Rachel's telephone call was, an even more disturbing thought intruded. The snake was in the telephone wire. What if the snake had been trying to listen in on the extension phone? I knew the idea was absurd, but I couldn't help a superstitious shiver of dread. In fact, I was so troubled that I decided to forego my date with Rachel, the waitress. It wouldn't matter anyway. She'd be angry at some man at the club with a cute, bald head. The next day, I did the only thing that really relaxed me. I went to the beach. It proved to be an excellent idea. I stretched out on the golden sand and let the sun warm me. I listened to the waves beating against the shore. I listened to the haunting cries of seagulls circling overhead. Suddenly, I was aware that the gulls, which had been hovering over the water, were now hovering over me. Instead of the cries being sad and plaintive, now they seemed menacing. I stood up hastily, but the gulls seemed to be increasing in number. I saw their sharp, pointed beaks, their raking claws. They were predators, of course. How many times had I seen them swoop into a dive and snatch up some poor fish out of the sea? And there was one seagull in particular. Its beady eyes seemed to be staring at me. No, it was my imagination, of course. I wasn't the fish. I was a man. But just the same, I found myself also running down the beach. Running for dear life. And that's when I knew it was time to see a doctor.
Yes, Mr. Moresby. I'm very pleased that you honored the temple with your presence.
I'm grateful that you're willing to see me, Dr. Singh. I realized that, well, you had a disappointment.
A disappointment? I'm afraid I don't understand.
I know my wife made certain promises to you concerning her will.
I believe she mentioned some modest donation.
She wasn't in her right mind, of course. I mean, when she took those sleeping pills.
Yes, it was very sad. I trust that she has found the peace and happiness that she sought.
Frankly, that's what I wanted to talk to you about. I mean, about whether you really believe that my wife is, well, that she's some kind of animal right now.
But of course I believe it, Mr. Moresby. I don't merely believe. I'm positive. When your wife passed from this world into the next, her soul made its escape.
Yes, yes, I know how it goes, but what I'd really like your opinion about is what sort of animal do you think she might be now?
I told you, Mr. Moresby, we have no way of knowing.
But can't you take a guess? I mean, you said it might be influenced by a person's karma. Am I quoting you right?
Yes. The kind of person she was in life may well determine the kind of animal she is now. Your wife was soft. Your wife was gentle. Your wife was independent in spirit. Now, what animal does that remind you of?
I don't know. I can't think.
Then go home and think about it, Mr. Moresby. Go home and try to be one with the universe.
I went home, and I tried to be one with the universe. And when that didn't work, I tried being one with a bottle of scotch. I was still in the library, asleep in the big leather chair, when I heard the noise in the cellar. I simply had to investigate. I looked into the cellar and found that one bare bulb wasn't enough for a thorough search. I found a flashlight and went down the cellar steps. At first there was nothing I could see.
But then, it's an empty oil can. Swiftly, my flashlight picked out the culprit. At first, I thought it would turn out to be a mouse, but instead, it was a large, white cat. I don't like cats. I never have. Skulking, cynical creatures. When the beam of my flashlight hit it, the cat froze. I saw it was an alley cat. Its fur shaggy, its eyes baleful in the light. It was fat, and yet it was bony, too. I said scat, but it didn't scat. Instead, it started to walk toward me. And I knew for certain what Dr. Singh had meant. I knew for certain I was looking at the reincarnation of my wife. As soon as that hideous apparition howled at me, I made a cowardly dash for the cellar door. Once I was on the other side, I remembered the hunting rifle that Una had given me for Christmas. It stood unused in an upstairs closet. I found it. I loaded it and brought it back to the cellar. I hadn't fired a rifle since boyhood. I stood on the top of the stairs with my flashlight picked out the ghostly white form of the cat. I put down the light, raised the weapon, and squeezed the trigger. The report was deafening, but the recoil was worse. My precarious balance on the top step was lost. I fell to the bottom. I tried to get up again,
but the pain in my right leg was agonizing. I found out later that it was broken. But the cat was still alive. And it was regarding me at eye level now. Its fur matted with plaster dust. Its eyes filled with hatred. I tried to crawl toward my fallen rifle. Just as I saw the creature advancing toward me, I screamed, Una! My hand was on the rifle now, grasping it. Too quickly in my panic, my fingers touched the trigger, and the rifle went off again.
Moresby ended up in the hospital, Chief, with a broken leg and a bullet in his hip.
And then he died.
But I think he was telling the truth. You could see it in his eyes.
His silver eyes, right?
Yeah, his silver eyes.
And you really believe that the guy's wife came back as a cat to get her revenge?
What does it matter? It's still a good story.
Sorry, Prouty, I can't okay it.
Well, what if I got more details? What if I talked to this Dr. Singh? If I went to the Moresby cellar and found that cat?
And what would you do then? Ask her if she's Mrs. Moresby?
I still think it's worth a try, Chief.
I'll tell you what, Prouty. What are you doing for lunch?
I hadn't thought about it.
Well, think about buying my lunch.
You?
There's a pretty good restaurant right around the corner where the Moresbys live. Now we can get a bite there and then check out that cellar. This is where it happened, huh?
Moresby fell from these steps when he fired that rifle. Hey, you can still see the plaster dust where the bullet hit.
Yeah, I see it. But I don't see any white cat.
It might be hiding someplace.
Or it might be a figment of his imagination.
Maybe so. Hold it. Did you hear something?
No.
Listen. There it is. Look.
It's a cat, all right. And it looks like it just found its supper.
Oh, that mouse is still alive.
Yeah, but not for long. Look at it squirm.
He's eating it.
Yep. And there goes your mouse.
Oh, my God.
What's the matter, Prouty? Never see a cat eat a mouse before?
Chief, did you see that mouse?
Sure, I saw it.
But didn't you notice something?
Like what?
Its eyes. Chief, did you ever see a mouse with eyes like that? They were so pale blue, they were almost silver.
And so the cat and mouse game comes to an end. But according to Dr. Singh, there is no end. Perhaps Richard Moresby will have his turn next in another afterlife. I'll be back in a few moments.
This is Joan Crawford speaking for USO, United Service Organization. Do we, as civilians, know what it's like to be far from home in a foreign land? Listen to this real-life documentary about one of our servicemen over there.
Do you speak English?
Nein, ich spreche kein Englisch.
Do you speak English?
Nein.
Excuse me, can you help me?
Nein.
Excuse me, can anybody help me?
Hi, we sure can. This is the USO, and we have all kinds of help.
That's why I support USO, and you should too. USO makes a man feel closer to home while he's serving his country for you. Isn't money the least you can give? Please support USO.
Do you believe in reincarnation? Do you believe the dead return? We have to believe it, because here we are. The reincarnation of radio drama. We hope you'll keep us alive by listening again to the Radio Mystery Theater. Our cast included Patrick O'Neill, Marion Seldes, Nick Pryor, and Dan Ocko. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Radio Mystery Theater was sponsored in part by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. Now, a preview of our next tale.
Are you all right, Jerry?
Yeah. I'm all right. But I saw him.
Who?
The guy I was in the army with.
The two of you. Were you close?
He was my buddy.
Well, when was the last time you saw him in person?
The night he was killed.
Have you ever seen him again? Like you thought you did just now?
No. No, this is the first time.
Well, maybe you need a rest, Jerry.
Hattie, why now? Why tonight, after all these years?
Well, you say you saw him last the night he died in battle. Well, the sight of him dead must have stayed with you always.
But that's not how I just saw him, Patty. He wasn't in uniform. He was in civilian clothes.
You might have pictured him as he looked at a happier time.
I never saw him in civilian clothes.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time. Pleasant dreams.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI. Here's CBS Mystery Theater again tomorrow evening and every evening at 10:07 on KIXI, Seattle. Weather outlook calls for continued cold, but moderating slightly by Wednesday. Variable cloudiness, increasing chance of snow flurries tomorrow and Wednesday. Tomorrow's high, the mid-30s, upper 30s on Wednesdays, lows in the mid-20s. Currently, it's 30 degrees.
CBS News. The House Judiciary Committee has hired a Washington tax lawyer to investigate President Nixon's personal finances in relation to impeachment action. This is Ann Crosman reporting on the CBS Radio Network. The lawyer is Carl Price. He told CBS News he will be looking into the legality of two particular problems, whether or not the president should have paid a capital gains tax on the sale of part of his San Clemente estate, and whether or not he should have taken a deduction for donating his vice presidential papers. The New York Daily News quotes Price as saying he hopes to conduct his own audit of the president's income tax returns. Meantime, the House Judiciary Committee has retained Albert Jenner as minority counsel. He was the choice of committee Republicans, who now say his appointment ensures a professional, nonpartisan investigation of grounds for impeachment proceedings. The latest on Watergate in a minute.
Are you an unpublished author? Do you have a book-length manuscript ready or almost ready for publication?
or do you know of anyone else who is an unpublished author? If so, Vantage Press invites you to write to a leading New York publisher for a free illustrated brochure titled To the Author in Search of a Publisher. It explains how you may have your manuscript printed and published in a matter of months. Just write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. Whether your subject is fiction, nonfiction, poetry, or even scientific, specialized, or controversial, this 52-page brochure shows you how to arrange for prompt publication. To get your copy, write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. That's GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. If this is your first book, you'll find this free brochure especially valuable and informative. Write to GPO Box 1414, New York, New York. GPO Box 1414, New York, New York.
The Senate Watergate Committee is asking a federal court in Washington to rule on last year's subpoena of 5 tape recordings of presidential conversations with former White House counsel John Dean. Pending the outcome of that subpoena, the committee is holding off on a subpoena for 500 tapes and documents, which the White House has refused to turn over. More on those materials from Bernard Kelb at the Western White House.
The White House would not identify itself with Vice President Ford's hope that there may be an area of compromise between President Nixon and the Senate Watergate Committee over those subpoenaed tapes and documents. At the regular daily news briefing, spokesman Gerald Warren said the vice president has every right to speak up and give his opinion, but Warren suggested that Ford's opinion wasn't necessarily the president's. Warren said nothing has happened to change the situation as it was stated in the president's letter to the committee last Friday when he rejected the committee's subpoenas for some 500 White House documents and tapes. The president had made no mention of the possibility of a compromise. Warren also disclosed, in reply to questions, that the president and the vice president had not communicated either directly before or after Ford's appearance on the Sunday television interview, in which Ford appeared to be taking a different and more conciliatory tact from the president on the subpoenaed material. Bernard Kalb, CBS News, with the White House Press Corps in California.
Democratic Senator Vance Hartke is asking the Joint Committee on Internal Revenue and Taxation to review the tax returns of the major domestic oil companies.
It's been alleged and reported that these companies are paying in the neighborhood of about 2 to 5% tax. At the same time, they are receiving tax credits from the United States government for any amount that they pay in royalties and taxes to the foreign source. The net effect of this means that the increase in the price to the American consumer is being borne primarily by the American taxpayer and by the American government. The provisions which I have in a measure would have stopped this to a certain extent. Unfortunately, what they're doing is probably completely legal, but it makes it possible for them to avoid paying taxes.
Senator Vance Hartke, Federal Energy Chief William Simon is asking 26 major oil companies to provide fuel oil to independent distributors who normally receive their supplies from overseas. Back after this.
Give your head to a friend. Give your heart to your love. Give your cold. Achoo. Contact, the sooner the better.
Hey, I'm back. How's that cold?
Rotten. Get the Contact?
Oh, I got everything. Contact, cold tablets, and this liquid.
Oh, no.
Honey, it's all cold medicine.
Well, sure, but it only takes one contact for up to 12 hours continuous relief from sneezy, drips, congestion. For that, I'd need 6 of your cold tablets.
2 every 4 hours.
Or 3 ounces of nighttime liquid.
1 every 4 hours.
Or just one contact. The tiny time pills do it.
Well, it's all cold medicine.
Those others contain antipyretic analgesics, the liquid, antitussive, and alcohol. They're not in contact.
6 or 3 or 1. I choose the one contact.
Me too. And I'm the one with the cold.
Give me cold. Contact, the sooner the better.
6 or 3 or 1. When you catch a cold, take Contact. Only as directed.
Cuba is willing to start talks with the United States on reestablishing diplomatic relations as soon as the U.S. lifts its 12-year-old economic blockade against Cuba. Cuba's ambassador to Mexico made the announcement in Mexico City, saying the U.S. Navy leaving its base at Guantanamo is no longer a condition for the beginning of talks. Maynard Jackson was inaugurated last night as Atlanta's first black mayor. He said to the crowd, "We stand not so much as a gateway to the South, but as a gateway to a new era." This is Ann Crosman, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI, where the time now is 6 minutes past 11.
KIXI.
Sunrise, sunset, swiftly fly the years.